Does it seem that the India-U.S. nuclear deal is about to blow over? Time is running out. Condoleezza Rice promised Indian officials that the deal would be passed by June, but it may not even get through Congress before fall. U.S. and Indian negotiators envisioned a sequence of reciprocal steps for the deal's quick passage. The next big step is for Congress to give India an exception from the 1954 Atomic Energy Act. Both governments hope that Congress would change the U.S. law by this month, but a powerful coalition of nonproliferation advocates is at work in Washington to sink the deal in Congress. Now it doesn't seem that there will be enough time before summer recess, which will be followed in the fall by midterm elections, leaving only a brief window of opportunity in August. On top of that, key figures within the Bush administration may be dragging their feet. In an editorial for a Kyrgyzstani weekly, South Asia expert Selig Harrison named Undersecretary of State for Nonproliferation Robert Joseph, David Addington from Vice President Dick Cheney's office, and John Rood, the nonproliferation specialist at the National Security Council. Joseph is known to be an ally of his predecessor and current U.S. representative at the United Nations, John Bolton. Bolton has opposed nuclear concessions to India. He also blocked an Indian plan to acquire the Arrow anti-missile system from Israel. That deal fell through because Israel needed U.S. permission to sell the system to foreign nations. Then there's the nuclear supplier group. Members of the NSG have notified the U.S. they will not act until Congress changes U.S. laws. During the March 22nd, 23rd NSG meeting in Vienna, several countries, including China, Japan, Sweden, and New Zealand, questioned the wisdom of the deal. Freelance defense analyst Kaushik Kapisthalam speculates that the U.S. may not even raise the India issue at the NSG plenary this May 29th to June 2nd in Rio de Janeiro. And where does that leave Canada? On September 26, 2005, Pierre Pettigrew, the foreign affairs minister in Paul Martin's Liberal government, announced an initiative that sought engagement with India but stopped short of lifting restrictions on trade in dual-use nuclear technology. At the time, Pettigrew assured Canadians, quote, "India has separated its civilian and nuclear weapons programs and has put the civilian program under international atomic energy safeguards," end quote. Speaking at a news conference with visiting Australia Prime Minister John Howard last week, Stephen Harper expressed the view that his government might not go along with the U.S.-India nuclear deal because India hasn't signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty. His new Conservative Party has not yet established a nuclear policy. However, the Conservative Party policy declaration of March 19, 2005, does say that a Conservative government will make Parliament responsible for exercising effective oversight over the conduct of Canadian foreign policy. So what's the deal? Pettigrew's statement had been the Canadian response when George Bush and Indian Prime Minister Manmohan Singh announced their agreement to restore U.S. nuclear cooperation with India back in March and again in July 2005. The details of the agreement are still being negotiated, but here are some of the main points. India agrees to allow inspectors from the International Atomic Energy Agency, the United Nations Nuclear Watchdog Group, access to its civilian nuclear program. But India would decide which of its many nuclear facilities to classify as civilian. Teresita Schaefer, director of the South Asia Program at the U.S. Center for Strategic and International Studies, says these will now include domestically built plants, which India has not been willing to safeguard before. Military facilities and stockpiles of nuclear fuel that India has produced up to now will be exempt from inspections or safeguards. India commits to signing an additional protocol which allows more intrusive IAE inspections for its civilian facilities. India agrees to continue its moratorium on nuclear weapons testing. India commits to strengthening the security of its nuclear arsenals. India works toward negotiating a fissile material cutoff treaty with the United States, banning the production of fissile material for weapons purposes. India agrees to prevent the spread of enrichment and reprocessing technologies to states that don't possess them and to support international nonproliferation efforts. In return, U.S. companies will be allowed to build nuclear reactors in India and to provide nuclear fuel for its civilian energy program. During the Cold War, India was a leader in the non-aligned movement's call for complete global nuclear disarmament. India also pursued early opportunities to develop a full-scale civilian nuclear energy program under Atoms for Peace, including acquisition of nuclear reactors and fuel reprocessing technologies from Canada and the U.S. Atoms for Peace was based on the now discredited idea that a civilian nuclear energy program could not be used to develop nuclear weapons. India demonstrated the folly of that particular delusion. In 1955, Canada agreed to build a 40-megawatt research reactor for India, known as the CIRUS, the acronym for Canada-India Reactor United States. India promised that both the reactor and related fissile materials would only be used for peaceful purposes. Canada supplied half the initial uranium fuel for the reactor. The U.S. supplied the other half, plus heavy water to moderate the nuclear reactions. Canada signed two cooperation agreements with India. Many Indian nuclear reactors, both operational and planned, are based on CANDU technology and designs. All were supposed to be exclusively for peaceful use. But in 1974, India took fuel rods from the CIRUS reactor, extracted the plutonium, and detonated its first nuclear explosive. At the time, Indian leaders called it a peaceful nuclear explosion, but now they admit it was a test of a weapon design. In response, Canada and the U.S. ceased all nuclear cooperation with India. Resumed nuclear cooperation with India is controversial both domestically in India and abroad. After India tested five nuclear bombs in 1998, Canada imposed a moratorium on nuclear cooperation with India, leading the charge against India's nuclear behavior in the G8 and in the Security Council, while also demanding that India sign the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. Last November, the Simons Center for Nonproliferation and Disarmament Research at UBC convened a one-day conference on nuclear cooperation with India. M.V. Ramana from the Center for Interdisciplinary Studies in Environment and Development, Institute for Social and Economic Change in Bangalore, India, took the position that India needs neither nuclear energy for its development nor nuclear weapons for its security. Both India's nuclear hawks and its nuclear nationalists ignore the long-standing record of cost overruns and failures. Ernie Regeer, a Canadian from Project Plowshares, rejected ideas of selective nonproliferation and exceptionalism, which he saw at the heart of the U.S.-India nuclear deal. As he framed it, the challenge with regard to India is to encourage its support of the nonproliferation regime, including strict adherence to international rules on the transfer of nuclear materials and technology, without explicitly or even implicitly accepting India as a nuclear weapons state. Regeer is not willing to ignore India's past violations of nonproliferation norms. Neil Jeck from the Center for Global Security Research, Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in the United States, described the new U.S. nuclear cooperation agreement with India as an innovation that responds to new contingencies, that aims at enlisting India as an ally in global nonproliferation efforts, and that combines new initiatives with existing instruments such as the Nonproliferation Treaty. Seema Gallaut from the Center for International Trade and Security, the University of Georgia in the United States, also saw the agreement as a pragmatic policy innovation. She argued that focusing on the sanctity of the Non-Proliferation Treaty risks unintentionally strengthening the non-proliferation foes within India. Paul Kapoor of the Center for International Security and Cooperation at Stanford University in the States admits that there are continuing problems in India's civilian program, that U.S. recognition of India as a nuclear weapons state will create expectations of India that might not be fulfilled, especially vis-a-vis Iran and China. It could increase or decrease the stability in regional relationships, and that it would likely damage the Non-Proliferation Treaty by undermining nuclear supplier regulations, possibly encouraging current NPT signatories to leave the treaty, and implicitly jettisoning the NPT's foundational precept that all nuclear proliferation is equally undesirable. That's it for this Monday. This edition of World Report has been archived on the World Report website at cjly.net/worldreport, where you can get it either as a podcast or in raw MP3 format. From there, you can also find links to background reading at the blog called The Human Remains Collective. To comment or suggest a story, send email to earthling@cjly.net, attention World Report, or to Box 767, Nelson, British Columbia, Canada, V1L5R4. I'm Jim Terrell at Kootenai Co-op Radio. Thanks for listening.